Good afternoon. Welcome to the Commerce Committee, February 26th. We are still waiting for a quorum, and so we won't take any official action, but I would like to begin our testimony. We have a big and robust calendar for the day. As soon as we have a quorum, we will just break to do some basic business, call the committee to order. But until then, I would love to invite Representative Dabney up to present his bill. When we have a quorum, I will move the bill in front of the committee.
All right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And of course, there is an amendment for the bill as well when we get to that point. So thank you very much. Madam Chair, members, in 2007, the United States Congress passed the Military Lending Act, which placed an interest rate cap of 36% on payday loans for members of our military and their dependents. In its 88-page report to Congress justifying this Military Lending Act, the Department of Defense explicitly referred to payday loans as predatory on our armed service personnel, and enumerated the financial harms and emotional toll this product extracted on service members, their families, and, for their purpose, our military readiness. Everyday Minnesotans deserve no less protection when they go out for loans. House File 1501 brings Minnesota in alignment with the Military Lending Act, 16 other states, and the District of Columbia by placing that same 36% rate cap on payday loans made in Minnesota. The payday lending industry markets this extremely dangerous financial product as a short-term bridge loan, a welcome emergency loan when a car breaks down or a medical bill comes due. The marketing of these loans is not only disingenuous, it's a fabrication. These loans are a tool for the extraction of wealth from low-income working families. In 2016, our neighbors to the west, in South Dakota, passed by referendum with a 72% positive vote, a 36% lending cap on payday loans. In 2018, Colorado did the same thing with a higher percentage of an affirmative vote. We've heard from the past from the industry, and you may well hear many of these same things today, a number of arguments against placing appropriate regulation on these loans. Well, the borrowers, they'll say, will just run to the unregulated internet. There's not evidence nationally to prove that. And in fact, the Pew Charitable Trust looked into that very question and found that in states that cap payday lending rates, borrowers are not driven to seek payday loans online or from other sources. They'll say that payday borrowers will go to loan sharks. There hasn't been a prosecution for loan sharking in Minnesota since 1932. And that loan shark was charging less interest than payday lenders charge Minnesotans today. They'll tell us that they help borrowers to avoid overdraft fees and other bank fees. In fact, the opposite is true. Again, quoting from the Pew Charitable Trust, payday loans do not eliminate overdraft risk. And in fact, for nearly 30% of borrowers, they directly cause checking account overdrafts. In fact, payday borrowers are more at risk for being pushed into expensive bank overdraft fees, closed bank accounts, damaged credit scores, higher long-term lending rates, and even bankruptcy. You can't apply an APR, they'll say, an annual percentage rate, to a two-week loan. Well, you can when so many payday borrowers are in debt to their payday lenders for so much of the year. Nationally, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau found that the median number of payday loans for borrowers were indebted for two-thirds of the year. In Minnesota, a look at Department of Commerce data will tell you that one in five payday borrowers had payday loans out for more than 280 days in a given year. Why is that? Well, it's largely because the payday lending business model is purposefully lending to borrowers who do not have the ability to repay the loan and trapping them in a cycle of indebtedness from loan to loan to loan. They'll tell you that their business operates on a handshake and a smile, but that's not the way we lend money. We do it by contracts. And the contracts stipulate that the payday lender gets direct access to the borrower's bank account, and on payday, the first in line is the payday lender to get paid. Ahead of the rent, ahead of the car loan, ahead of the child care, ahead of the utilities, ahead of the grocery bill. You'd think the default rate is high on these loans, but the payday lending industry in Minnesota has testified before this committee in the past that, in fact, it's not. And, in fact, it's around 3%, very low rate. And they'll tell you that that people will have nowhere else to go if we place a 36% rate cap on payday loans. That's not true either. Evidence shows that our payday loans didn't even exist in Minnesota until 1995. They were illegal from 1858 to 1995, and there was no payday lending industry in Minnesota until 1999, 30 years ago. Other states in the District of Columbia that have placed a 36% rate cap on all of their residents, aligning with the Military Lending Act, have found that their residents do fine without this dangerous product as an option. In sum, I ask that members support House File 1501. And now I'd like to, if we may, Madam Chair, look to, I think you've got enough to move the bill and the amendment, and begin with testifiers.
Thank you for your testimony, Representative Davney. We do have a quorum. I will officially call the meeting to order. And the first order of business I'd like to take care of is the minutes. Representative Stevenson, have you had a chance to look at the minutes? And if so, could you move their approval?
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, I have, and I would move the approval of our minutes from February 20th, 2019.
Representative Stevenson moves minutes from February 20th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Next, I would like to move Representative Davney's bill so that it is in front of us officially. So I would like to move House File 1501 to be re-referred to the General Register. And then, Representative Davney, the A1 amendment, this is your author's amendment, sir?
It is. It's technical in nature, Madam Chair.
Very good. Then I will also move the A1 amendment to get the bill into the shape that the author desires. Is there any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. The bill is before us in the shape that the author wants, and we can begin to hear testimony. Members, just for a quick roadmap of the afternoon and evening, if necessary, we will try to complete public testimony on this bill by 3 o'clock before, if possible, so if everybody could keep their testimony to a minimum so we can have 15 minutes of discussion before we take up the next bill. And with that, I would like to call down. All right, I've buried my list now. Thank you. Oh, I would like to call the Attorney General's office to the table. Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carly Moline, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Attorney General. Attorney General Keith Ellison is in strong support of House File 1501 and the efforts of advocates, the public, and legislators to take care to address the issue of payday lending. I'm sorry, I just grabbed the wrong thing here.
Madam Chair, I think we're all having trouble burying our notes.
I think that it has something to do with being buried under snow. It's just getting to us all.
You might be onto something.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Davney, for carrying this bill. The Attorney General's office receives many complaints from Minnesotans who can't get out from underneath predatory lending practices and unreasonable interest rates. To give you an example of the type of complaint our office receives, one Minnesotan took out a loan for $1,700. He then paid $375 every 2 weeks. After three payments of $375, his principal balance only went down by $77. That's because he had an interest rate of 585%. 585%. These are people who want to pay their loan, but they want reasonable, conscionable interest rates. From our experience, we know that payday lending contract requires borrowers, as Representative Dabney stated, to provide their bank account numbers and authorizes the payday lender to extract repayment plus the exorbitant fees directly from the account on payday. After low-income Minnesotans have hundreds of dollars withdrawn from their accounts to cover outrageous interest rates, they are then caught short for other expenses and other shortfalls, which can eventually lead to bankruptcy. We know from a recent study that first-time payday borrowers were twice as likely as those not taking payday loans to file for bankruptcy. Minnesota consumers need protection up front, and Representative Dabney's bill caps the interest rate at 36%. That's still a high rate, plenty high enough for these lenders to continue to do business, but it's a lot lower than the excessive rates that Minnesotans are currently facing. The Attorney General's office will continue to help consumers navigate their current options for dealing with lenders and will continue to pursue action against lenders who violate current law. And we look forward to Representative Dabney's proposal becoming law so that Minnesota consumers and their families are protected up front. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I almost said Representative Moline. Thank you, Ms. Moline.
Thank you.
Next up, Eric Howard and Missy Juliet.
Grab one of those chairs and put it on.
Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony one after the other. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Representatives. My name is Eric Howard, and I serve as President and Chair of Exodus Lending, a statewide nonprofit that exists to relieve Minnesotans from financial stress caused by payday lenders. Exodus was founded after an Ace Cash Express opened its doors down the street of my home congregation. It didn't take long to see the impact and to hear the stories. The truth is, when people have no choice but to borrow cash at an interest rate as sky high as 300% and over, families suffer, people suffer, and communities across the state decline. Exodus was founded as a response. We reach people in counties across the state. We pay off their loan, and they pay us back over 12 months at 0% interest and zero judgment. We provide relief, and we advocate for meaningful policy change. Today, our program has served over 260 Minnesotans since we began providing loans in 2015. Over 130 people are currently enrolled in our program, and that number is climbing. House File 1501 would provide relief to the over 35,000 Minnesotans estimated to be caught in the cycle of payday loan debt, and it would restore our communities. I know this because I know our participants. I've heard their stories, and I've listened to their concerns. A St. Paul resident whose loan took away money for groceries and gas, a Northfield resident who had to decide which bills to skip for the month, a Royalton resident caught in a debt cycle and had to keep reborrowing, a Detroit Lakes resident who lost a huge chunk of their paycheck every payday to cover their loan, a Dilworth resident who didn't cover bills because of their loan, and a Woodbury resident who told us, as a family, we are stuck in a cycle of debt which prevents us from moving on financially with our lives. Participants who tell us these stories tell us payday lenders take advantage of them through unbelievably high interest rates and fees in their most vulnerable moments. Since we opened our doors, we have lent $205,000 and estimate that we have saved participants in total $630,000 in interest and fee payments. That's money they keep for living expenses, and that's money kept in our communities. House File 1501 is a common sense solution to our state's payday lending crisis. Please support House File 1501. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Juliet, you can proceed. State your name and proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Melissa Juliet, and I was a former participant of Exodus Lending, and to give you a little bit of background, I currently reside in White Bear Lake with my two children and my partner, and I've worked at the University of Minnesota for over 6.5 years. So in my mind, I may not be your typical payday lender recipient, but we'll get to that. 2.5 years ago, I found myself a single mother. Things looked great as I was going to start out on my own, and then I got my first financial surprise. My son received Social Security survivor's benefits, and they were cut by $200. Consequently, due to the situation that I left, I had my children in biweekly therapy to weekly therapy, which was that $200 in copays that I was missing. So I fell behind. I fell behind on all of my bills, including my rent. And the late fee started to mount, and I didn't know what to do. So I did something I swore I'd never do again. In my early 20s, I had taken out a payday loan and managed to break the cycle. However, I did not know that this was going to spiral as much as it did. I took out my first loan for $480, and I was expected to pay back $552. That was $72 in fees and interest rate alone. So I did that. Seemed doable. However, those fees became unmanageable. So I took out another payday loan up until I had four payday loans. And I couldn't keep going on like that. So as I mentioned before, my employer, the university, provides an employee assistance program. So I went to look at debt management counseling. Unfortunately, LSS does not provide that sort of service, and they pointed me to Exodus Lending. I'm sorry. So I was told that Exodus Lending would provide me with a 0% interest-free loan, and I would be able to make manageable monthly payments to get back on my feet. So on July 3rd, 2017, I contacted them to see if this was true. And I was met by open arms from Kathy, and she stepped me through the process so I could break free of this constant cloud over my head. So we came up with the plan, and I successfully paid everything off in August of last year. However, that's not the case for many people. Exodus Lending was a lifesaver for me, but the problem in Minnesota is enormous and much bigger than their services have the capacity to handle. And we need to end these predatory practices so that Minnesota families can stop paying interest rates of over 300% and put that money towards groceries, housing, and taking care of our families. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you for sharing your story. Next, we have Diane Standard from the Center for Responsible Lending. Oops, I'm sorry, I missed one. Samantha Priestenson. And then Diane Standard. You can stand nearby, if you will. Yes, thank you. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Samantha Priestenson, and I am a Minnesota resident, a mother of three, a wife, and I am here speaking on behalf of myself, my community, and the organization that I work for, Village Financial Cooperative. The crisis of predatory lending in Minnesota is one that we're all too familiar with, a crisis well-researched, a crisis long admired, and one that is costing our taxpayers millions of dollars in state assistance while lining the pockets of billionaires for decades. As a U.S. Army veteran who served in Afghanistan in both 2006 and 2007, I have been protected from the predatory practices of payday and title loans through the Federal Military Lending Act, which caps interest rates for active military, and I believe it is time we take action in extending these protections to each and every Minnesotan once and for all. The inequity of payday lending, the payday lending industry has contributed to the systemic racial economic disparities in our state. Lenders target folks in vulnerable communities, extracting money and preventing those families in these communities from building assets and generational wealth. During my time as a senior policy aide for Minneapolis Ward 4 Councilmember Philippe Cunningham, I saw the harm caused when a marginalized, redlined community's only financial institutions were payday lenders. With no advocate, no equitable financial products or services, and no protection against predatory lending, folks who were the most vulnerable were preyed upon, paying the highest price just to make it by. Black residents in Minnesota are twice as likely to live within 2.5 miles of a payday lender. While the majority of payday loans are borrowed in suburban Twin Cities, we know that due to a lower median income and disparities that have reduced generational wealth in the Black community, family and friends aren't as much of an option when emergencies arise. The only other financial institution in North Minneapolis, also headquartered in Minnesota, has historically pumped hundreds of millions of dollars in capital into the payday loan industry, including providing financing to Payday America and Ace Cash Express, as well as to other payday lenders operating in Minnesota. This is a systemic issue and an industry built on taking advantage of people at their most vulnerable. Minnesotans can't build up assets for future emergencies once they are caught in the payday lending trap. A $400 loan at about 200% APR on average can expect to pay back over $300 in interest and fees by the time the loan is fully paid back. While Minnesota legislators have struggled to address this crisis for decades, everyday people have risen up and fought back. Church leaders and conservative Minnesotans who had seen enough of the carnage predatory lending had caused raise the capital to fund a loan program to help folks caught in payday lending traps as created Exodus Lending. Black community members and activists who were sick and tired of the systemic racial disparities, fueled in part by predatory lending, organized an effort to launch their own financial institution, the one that I work for, Village Financial Cooperative. Our Black-led credit union received an approved charter application from the Minnesota Department of Commerce in record time and expects to be open this summer. However, our pledge members could not wait for the credit union to open because the desperation for an alternative to these payday loans was too high. Due to ongoing requests from community, we developed the New Day Loan in June of 2018, which is a loan product for up to $500 at only 0 to 8% interest and up to 6 months to repay. By November of 2018, we had lent out over 20 loans and had 100% repayment rate. This is an alternative that works. No matter how powerful our combined efforts are, we are no match for the insatiable greed of the predatory lending industry, and without legal protection for Minnesotan families, Exodus Lending and Village Financial Cooperative's New Day Loan are only band-aids on bullet wounds. I implore you as servants of our state to please take a stand and share in the courage of everyday Minnesotans who decided that their families and neighbors deserve better than triple-digit interest rates, wealth extraction from the most vulnerable and underserved communities. Please join us in creating an equitable and fair economy and put an end to the crisis of predatory lending in our state. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Diane Standard, and you can correct my pronunciation when you get to the table. And after that, Bishop Ann Svegnonsson, and she can also correct my pronunciation if need be. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Diane Standard. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Diane Standard. I'm the Director of State Policy for the Center for Responsible Lending. And the Center for Responsible Lending is a nonprofit, nonpartisan policy and research organization dedicated to building family wealth through curbing abusive financial practices. The stories you have heard today are not unique nor isolated. In fact, they are reflective of a business model that is driven by keeping people trapped in unaffordable loans. As you've heard, payday loans are marketed as a quick fix, but in reality cause a long-term cycle of debt. They charge extremely high rates of 200 to 300% interest rates. They take direct access to the borrower's bank account, and they make no assessment as to whether or not that loan is affordable in light of a borrower's income or expenses. This toxic combination of loan terms is the debt trap by design, and it is this debt trap which drives their business model. What do I mean by that? In Minnesota and nationally, the average payday loan borrower is stuck in 10 loans a year, typically without a break. Also nationally, 75% of all payday loan fees are due to borrowers with more than 10 loans a year. That's three quarters of their revenue coming from people stuck in more than 10 loans a year. On the flip side, only 2% of their loans are due to borrowers who take out just one loan a year. So it's not just the short-term consequences of the debt trap that are concerning, but so are the long-term consequences that we've heard about today, the increasing likelihood of bankruptcy, bank penalty fees, and again, once the payday loan goes into debt collection, it increases the damage to credit scores, which increases barriers to jobs, housing, and affordable products in the future. So This House File 1501 will align Minnesota with the Military Lending Act as well as 16 other states. These protections in other states reach 100 million people and save their residents over $2 billion a year in fees that would otherwise go to payday lenders. In addition, many of these state laws, as you've heard, were enacted with overwhelming approval by voters. In Colorado, Montana, South Dakota, over 70% of voters approved a 36% rate cap. So inevitably, people ask, what happens after a rate cap? Does the sky fall? No. No, it doesn't. We can look to the military and the 16 other states for that confirmation. Many states without payday loans have, in fact, never had them and have repeatedly rejected proposals to legalize them in their states. For other states that once had payday loans but now do not, borrowers report being glad to see gone this thing that looked easy to get into but was in fact hard to get out of. And they also report having a range of other financial options to deal with a financial shortfall. More importantly, we hear from former borrowers who have been able to now build assets for the future, such as purchasing a car or a home, which was not possible while they were buried under the payday loan debt. And it's not just the borrowers who feel the reprieve of the rate cap, but communities do too. As you've heard, payday lenders strip millions of dollars a year from the communities in which they're located, diverting resources not only from other businesses, but from charities. So for example, after the rate cap, charitable organizations that used to spend millions of dollars, significant resources digging people out of the debt trap, are able to actually better directly meet people's needs rather than paying the payday lender first. Military relief societies reported the same experience, saving hundreds of thousands of dollars of aid after the military rate cap was enacted. So in conclusion, you know, the debt trap is the core of the business model, and it causes long-term consequences that entrench borrowers in a second-class, more costly financial system. Consumers in states with rate caps save money, have numerous ways to deal with a financial shortfall, suffer fewer negative consequences such as bankruptcy and bank account closures, and they remain supportive of the rate cap. So again, the most effective way to address the harms that you've talked about today is to support a rate cap such as what's in House File 1501. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I'd like to invite Bishop Ann Svegnensen to the committee. Velkommen, tell me how to say your name.
Yes, it's not as easy as Halverson. Thank you, Chair Halverson. My name is Ann Svenningson, and I serve as Bishop of the Minneapolis Area Synod, which comprises 145 congregations, Lutheran congregations, and about 175,000 people. And I am grateful for the chance to be with you today. In our churches, we see the devastating effects of payday loans on both families and communities. You've heard several of the stories. I want to share some other stories from another age group, and that is on payday loans focused on seniors on fixed incomes. Because payday loans are easy to get and seem like a good solution to short-term needs, trusting seniors borrow funds only to end up in this downward spiral of debt. Like an 81-year-old from Ely who ended up paying more than $500 for a $300 loan. And she said, this takes advantage of people who are desperately in need. It's a penalty for needing some help. A 66-year-old grandma took out a $500 payday loan to help her son avoid eviction so her grandkids would have a home after her son lost his job. She paid back more than $1,700 on a $500 loan and described the process as preying on the poor. A 75-year-old from Prior Lake needed funds and secured a payday loan. He didn't anticipate the debt trap it would create for him, saying, when you pay your loan plus the exorbitant interest, you're back in the hole again, only worse than where you were before. These experiences are far too common across our state, not only for seniors, but for all Minnesotans, people paying interest rates of more than 300%. 8 years ago, in 2010, the Minneapolis Area Synod Assembly adopted a resolution asking for a cap of 36% on payday loans. Other Lutheran synods in our state have done just the same. And it's not just Lutherans asking for this. A whole Interfaith Coalition is working for change. Yes, we recognize the need for businesses in Minnesota to make an equitable profit, but that's not what's happening here. These loans exploit people's financial vulnerabilities for profits. All faith traditions in our state share a commitment to the struggling and to the marginalized. Please, I urge you to support this bill before you today. In closing, I want to thank each and every one of you for your vocations in serving the common good as legislators. I know it's very hard work, and we are grateful. And I thank you finally for the opportunity to address you today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Paul Cassidy. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will keep this brief. I promised you inside of 5 minutes. I'm Paul Cassidy. I'm with the law firm Stinson Leonard Street. My firm represents Payday America, and we're here today to speak in opposition to House File 1501. Payday America has locations throughout Minnesota and provides loans to thousands of customers every month who have short-term credit needs. This bill will effectively eliminate over $100 million in short-term credit currently available in Minnesota, cutting off tens of thousands of Minnesotans who each year access short-term credit. This legislation will have the complete opposite effect of what supporters intend. This legislation will force individuals into worse options when they need short-term credit recourse. By eliminating their choices, you drive them to higher cost, unregulated lenders who use less than ethical debt collection practices and whom you as a regulator have no control over. Those choices include, as Representative Dabney alluded to, taking loans off the street from loan sharks and or the black market, the internet from both offshore and onshore unregulated lenders, from unregulated sovereign nation payday lenders, and from border states, some of whom are unregulated at fees and interest rates much higher than allowed under Minnesota's consumer lending laws. We are unaware of any material complaints from Minnesota consumers involving our loans, loans written by other regulated consumer loan and payday loan lenders and regulated by the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Minnesota's regulated short-term consumer loan industry is a safe, reasonable, and responsible place for consumers seeking financial products. Putting us out of business or restricting customers' access to credit doesn't reduce the demand or the need. It simply leaves a $100 million hole in our consumer credit market. The supporters of this legislation also say there is no underwriting conducted with these loans, and therefore consumers are unable to repay their obligation. Nothing could be further from the truth. To be clear, we don't make loans to customers unless they have verified and sustainable incomes and have the ability to repay their loan. It would be an unsustainable business practice to do otherwise. So who are our consumers? Our consumers are middle-income Minnesotans. They're educated. They own homes. Their families, both young and old. They're stable working-class people that many of you work with on a day-to-day basis. Lastly, our customers are intelligent consumers who sometimes find the need for a short-term loan, and they do not want their financial choices reduced. You may recall we passed the toughest consumer lending law in the country in 2009. I worked closely with Representative Dabney on that legislation. The 2009 legislation, coupled with existing Minnesota laws, provides for tough consumer small loan regulation. Supporters are simply opposed to this industry and these loan products. If you enact this legislation, the demand for the credit is not going to go away. You'll force Payday America to reduce the number of loans it can write or force it out of business completely. This, in turn, will eliminate jobs and a critical source of short-term, unsecured consumer credit to thousands of Minnesotans without any legitimate alternative sources of credit at a time when it may be needed most. Payday America is licensed in Minnesota as an industrial loan and thrift lender under Chapter 53 of Minnesota statutes. As an industrial loan and thrift, Payday America has greater flexibility in the products and services it can provide its customers. Under Minnesota Statute 4760, or the Payday Statute, the only financial product that Payday America can offer to its consumers is a single payment, unsecured loan up to $350 for no longer than 30 days. As an industrial loan and thrift, Payday America can offer many other services to its customers. The ability to offer these additional financial products and services comes with increased regulatory scrutiny. The licensing requirements for investor loan and thrifts are far greater than that those for payday lenders. The Minnesota Department of Commerce conducts periodic in-person audits that scrutinize our activities. There's no so-called loophole, just an expanded range of services that are greatly appreciated by our customers. Finally, Madam Chair and members, the current statutes were first contemplated years ago, as Representative Dabney alluded to protect citizens from unscrupulous characters who operated underground and who took advantage of workers in need of short-term cash. The law was created to bring those transactions above board and put reasonable regulations in place to protect citizens. Was it contemplated that these types of loans were short-term transactions with high interest rates and fees? Of course it was. Lawmakers also understood at the time, without regulation, the business of short-term lending would go underground and individuals would be taken advantage of and people would turn to other options without regulation. Madam Chair and members, we respectfully oppose this legislation. If you consider the consequences of the legislation, the critical need to provide Minnesota consumers a safe and responsible place for them to access short-term credit products, you will not advance this proposal. Take the time to view this issue in the context of what really is happening on the ground right here in Minnesota. The need is not going to go away. We have a safe, responsible, and reasonable regulated small consumer loan industry in Minnesota that takes care of its customers. Finally, I'll ask you to consider one question. Do you think it's reasonable and fair for someone to pay $30, approximately $30, for the privilege of taking out a $350 loan for 2 weeks? That's the heart of the question you're being asked today. Madam Chair, thank you very much, and I would stand for questions.
Thank you for your testimony. We did have another testifier who came in the room after testimony started, so normally I wouldn't always extend testimony time, but our Attorney General would like to address us as well. So, welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here, and proceed. You can state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you, Representative Dabney, for introducing this legislation. Just a very few targeted points. Number one, my office does see complaints regarding payday loan products on a regular basis. We just began tracking these, so I can't give you a definitive number, but when my assistant, former Representative Carly Moline, asked our complaint staff to share with her what they knew, they were able to give her four complaints right on the spot. So it's not as if these things aren't happening. They do happen. Usually they resolve through some form of mediation or something like that, but the complaints are coming in. Let me also say that I think that the idea that putting a cap in place like this will destroy ongoing business concern is interesting to me, given that various other community enterprises have found a way to provide products that don't drive people into financial ruin. I mean, I thought the testimony that you heard just from Exodus and from the other institution were critical. I mean, people are doing exactly what the industry says can't be done, and I think that is important to keep in mind. Also, too, there has been research in the area of whether or not for states that have caps, and other states do have them, if there's been a precipitous drive towards abusive loan products. In other words, you hear the argument, if you put a cap in place, it's just going to force people to loan sharks. The truth is that the research conflicts with that claim. In fact, this has been, there's studies on this. In fact, Pew Research did a study on this exact question, and they found that there was no particularly dramatic move. In fact, the amount of use of internet products or other sort of loan products does not vary between cap states and non-cap states like Minnesota. So I think that that argument also is not accurate. I'll simply say this, it would do workers, consumers, people who purchase loan products tremendous good to have this cap in place. And I'll just say it is important to point out that this measure isn't something that's simply going to help the poor. It's going to help the working poor, the people who you can't get a payday loan unless you have a bank account and a job. And so it is hardworking people who are struggling to meet all kinds of bills, whether it's the price of prescription drugs, education, student loans, all on top of a exorbitant cost of these high-cost payday loans. So I'll stop there and just thank the committee and just indicate from the standpoint of my office, this would be a benefit to consumers in Minnesota.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Attorney General. Is there anybody else from the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing no one, I will move to member questions. And members, we're going to try to keep this under 15 minutes if we can. We'll see where the conversation takes us. So are there questions for the bill author or any of the testifiers? Representative Katiza-Watoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Davi, or potentially Mr. Cassidy? I'm curious if in this line of business, are the loan percentages variable, or do they tend to be just like whatever loan you get, it's a standard percentage rate? If you apply for another loan, does that rate go up or does it change on you? I'm curious about the cycle that some people end up getting stuck in. If you could speak to that a little bit, please.
Mr. Cassidy.
Madam Chair, Representative, the rates are regulated by statute, so they don't vary. So you follow the statute. Under this would be a strict, obviously, 36% annual APR versus now it's per transaction. The interest rates do extrapolate out to be large numbers, but I can tell you that, like I said, testified to that on average we lend $350 and we charge $30 for the benefit of having it for 2 weeks. Second, I would also like to point out, as long as I'm back up here, we cannot write another loan to a consumer that has an outstanding loan. Now, do consumers probably go shopping at other places? I don't know that. But under the law that we worked on years ago, you can't write another loan until the first loan is paid off, the outstanding debt. Thank you.
Representative Katiza-Watoon.
Thank you. That helps clear up the cycle a little bit. Yep. So people are able to go to another similar institution and take out another loan, and it kind of contributes to that cycle. Thank you.
Representative Dabney, do you have a follow-up?
I do. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Representative Katiza-Watoon, the debt cycle is part of the business model for payday lenders. So Mr. Cassidy, of course, is right. I can't take out a second loan until I pay off the first. The model is churning. So I come in, I pay off that loan because they've already taken the money out of my account. That's part of the problem. I needed $500 for car repair. Now I can't make rent, the car loan, the utility bills and the like. So now I'm back for another loan. And then 2 weeks later, I'm back for another loan and another loan 2 weeks after that. And that's where the revenue for the payday lenders comes, is that repeated churning of the loans.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney. Mm-hmm.
The loan sharks of old used to just borrow you the money to pay off the first one and then give you the loan for the second one. Is that what the loan sharks of today do? I mean, payday lenders?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, I think that's what I just described.
Thank you.
Representative Richardson.
So a question for you, Mr. Cassidy, because you talked about the safety of the loans and this idea of loan sharks. I'm curious whether you've looked at any of the health impact assessment studies on payday loans and the impacts that there have been links with, like, mental health, anxiety, stress, and risks of suicide. Is that something that you're thinking about in terms of the safety of these loans as well?
Mr. Cassidy.
Madam Chair, Representative, I have not.
Any follow-up, Representative Richardson? No. Any additional questions, members? Seeing none, we can move to a vote. I will renew my motion that House File 1501 as amended, be re-referred to the general register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. You're on your way, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you to the testifiers.
And members, we're just going to go out of order a little bit. We will do the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Bill. That is my bill. Representative Stevenson will be in the chair. I'm going to move up front. And hoping to take less than 15 minutes on this bill.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, just was quick question, like what time are we planning on coming back tonight, or what's the, do we have, it will be this room?
I will going along? Inquire as to Chair Halverson if she has an answer to that particular question.
Being the last committee of the day, we get this room as long as we want, Representative Swazinski. We can go two paths depending on how the day goes. My hope is that we would be able to take all the public testimony before our adjournment time of 4 o'clock, and then we can power through on our debate until 4:30, or we can choose to adjourn and come back after 6. So depending on how many questions people have.
Good?
Thank you.
And Chair Halverson, if you're ready to proceed, I don't know if you have a motion to re-refer your bill to the Judiciary Committee. General Register, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 349 be re-referred to the General Register.
Okay, and having made that motion, the floor is yours to present the bill.
Thank you very much, and thank you, members, for being here today. We're here to address tobacco use in Minnesota with the bills that are in front of us today in the Commerce Committee. And this is a vitally important issue facing the state of Minnesota. There was a time just a few years ago where we were winning the war against big tobacco in Minnesota. Youth tobacco rates had fallen to a historic low in our state, and kids were not picking up the habit of addiction that our generation has seen. Anybody who knows anybody who has had to deal with the addiction of tobacco knows just how hard and horrible it is. We also know, because of science and data, that tobacco use costs the state of Minnesota billions of dollars a year in health care costs, and it costs the lives of people that we love and we care about. One of the great things about the bills that you're about to hear today is that we have great bipartisan support for these bills. It's a joy to work across the aisle when it comes to the health of the kids of the state of Minnesota. So here's a little background. As I said, back in 2014, we reached the lowest number of Minnesota youth who were taking up tobacco. But now we're ceding territory to big tobacco again in Minnesota. It's because big tobacco is relentless when it comes to targeting and marketing at our children. And the targeting and marketing is very successful and very effective. We know this because of Minnesota's landmark lawsuit against the tobacco companies. Because of that lawsuit, they were required to open up their books to us. They were required to open up their marketing plans. And what we discovered is the way that they market to kids. They use flavors, they use cartoon characters, and they market more broadly to the general public by using health claims that there is a safer alternative cigarette, like light cigarettes, which they are now prohibited from marketing and selling. The famous old doctors prefer camels advertising campaign was a effort to deny and bury the information that tobacco companies knew and that the government was getting wise to, that cigarettes kill people when used as directed. And so we don't want to go back to the bad old days of tobacco addiction in Minnesota. That's why these bills are coming before this committee. It's because public policy works. How much territory have we ceded to big tobacco in Minnesota? Let's talk about e-cigarettes.
40% of middle schoolers in Minnesota have tried e-cigarettes. Think about that for a moment. Think about your kids. I have a soon-to-be middle schooler. Odds are that he is going to try these products if we do not take a stand in Minnesota against them. Think about all the kids in the districts that you represent. Think about your middle schools. This is a trend that our U.S. Surgeon General is calling an epidemic. The marketing of these products aren't new. It's the same old wolf in its different sheep's clothing. They're using flavors, flavors like gummy bear or red velvet cake or one of the grossest, unicorn poop, which is supposed to taste like Skittles. And it's marketed in a container with a cartoon unicorn on it, right out of the big tobacco playbook, folks. There's no safe way for kids to consume nicotine in Minnesota, be it through combustible tobacco, be it through chewing, be it through e-cigarettes. Nicotine is dangerous. Juul is one of the most popular, is the most popular tobacco product among youth right now. And we know that one Juul cartridge can contain up to a pack of, the equivalent of a pack of cigarettes of nicotine. Do you want your kids sucking on a Juul cartridge all day long? But we need to, so we need to take action. That much nicotine directly impacts the developing brain. And the reason I started working on this issue is because I was at a conference back in 2014 where a neuroscientist was talking to us about addiction. And he talked to us about the impact of nicotine on the developing brain and the pathways that it makes for greater opportunities for addiction, the way that it changes kids' brains. It's pretty horrifying. In addition to that, if your brain is fully developed, if you've reached that magic age of 25, we know that nicotine also has an impact on your heart health. And that is significant as well. We don't have to choose which products we're going to addict our kids to. We've taken a big swipe out of the tobacco company's customer base by targeting our kids and making sure that our policies protect kids in Minnesota. We don't have to choose to let our kids get addicted to e-cigarettes either. Research shows us that kids who use e-cigarettes are 2 times more likely to smoke cigarettes in the future. These are kids who would have never picked up a cigarette. These are former never smokers, but they are 2 times more likely to pick up combustible tobacco. I had somebody one time say minimize e-cigarettes by saying, boy, I'd rather find e-cigarettes in my kid's sock drawer than a pack of smokes. And I'm here to tell you, if you find e-cigarettes, the odds are you're going to find a pack of smokes. We don't want our kids addicted to tobacco. This is just another tool to addict our kids to tobacco products. And Minnesota is going to take a stand. So my bill before you, House File 349, adds e-cigarettes to Minnesota's clean indoor air law. This is a very common sense step that many communities across the state have taken, and it's time for the state to join their ranks. Currently, e-cigarettes contain nicotine. They're classified under tobacco products as under state and federal law for tax and youth access purposes, but there's a loophole in the clean indoor air law, and it's time for us to close that. We know that e-cigarette vapors are not harmless. They contain heavy metals, formaldehyde, and other cancer-causing agents. This bill expands the definition of smoking to ensure that Minnesota's smoke-free air laws protect everyone and cover e-cigarettes wherever smoking is already prohibited. The expanded definition also ensures we're doing our best to cover any new products we see now or to the future. E-cigarettes were almost unheard of 10 years ago. In 2014, they were still very, very new to the market when we started working to regulate these in the state of Minnesota. Over 50 communities around our state have already incorporated e-cigarette into their clean indoor air laws, and it's time for the rest of the state to be covered by these protections. The other thing I want everybody to be crystal clear about with e-cigarettes is that e-cigarettes are not a quit smoking tool. As I told you, the marketing of e-cigarettes is really based on getting people to use the product. E-cigarette manufacturers actually sued the FDA so that they are not considered a quit smoking product. They also have not been able to prove complete harm reduction. This is not a safe product. There are harms that are associated with this, including things like popcorn lung, which it doesn't sound like a spot treatment, does it? So I don't want anybody to get the notion that somehow e-cigarettes are harmless or safer. Use of e-cigarettes by anyone is a concern, and use of e-cigarettes by our kids is an epidemic. I'd like to introduce Emily Myatt from the American Cancer Society to provide some background as well.
Thank you, Chair Halverson. Ms. Wyatt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of Chair Halverson's bill. My name is Emily Myatt. I'm the Government Relations Director for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. We're the nonpartisan, nonprofit advocacy affiliate of the American Cancer Society. I'm here today representing Minnesota's cancer patients and survivors, many whom suffer from tobacco-related cancers. I'm also here today on behalf of Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation, a coalition of 60 organizations supporting the legislation. We include the Heart Association, the American Lung Association, Clearway Minnesota, North Point, the health plans, many provider groups, and the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. Many of these organizations helped to pass Freedom to Breathe in 2007. Some of you might remember the controversy that once surrounded the law and how it took years to pass. Today, that controversy is surprising. Freedom to Breathe is one of the most popular laws our state has ever seen. Minnesotans of all stripes agree that the legislature made the right call by prohibiting smoking indoors. It's a fact that health in Minnesota is benefiting from Freedom to Breathe. Studies have found a decrease in the exposure to carcinogens in secondhand smoke, as well as a reduction in heart attacks, which can be directly attributed to the law. The use of e-cigarettes in workplaces, including restaurants and bars, can undermine public health benefits that continue to be achieved by our Clean Indoor Air Law. In December, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota conducted a statewide poll on the issue. Over 80% of Minnesotans support prohibiting e-cigarettes where smoking is already prohibited. It's hard to find any issue with such universal statewide support. In the same poll, nearly everyone, 98%, agreed that nicotine is harmful for young people, and they're right. When the 2007 law was written, e-cigarettes were practically unheard of. Its authors couldn't have imagined a time when 1 in 5 Minnesota students would report using e-cigarettes regularly. But that's today's reality. For the first time in 17 years, youth tobacco use is on the rise, and e-cigarettes are the direct cause. Products like Juul are extremely efficient nicotine delivery systems, which is concerning because it's leading to the surge in youth and kids becoming addicted. It comes in flavors like mango and mint, and each pod, like Chair Halverson said, contains as much nicotine as a whole pack of cigarettes. The Surgeon General says Juul is driving a youth nicotine epidemic. And just so it's clear who's making the money on these products, last year Altria, also known as Philip Morris, the maker of Marlboro, bought a third of the Juul company for $12.8 billion. Juul wants you to believe that they're not big tobacco, but big tobacco is co-opting these products so they can continue to make big profits off of nicotine addiction. Back in 2014, only a handful of communities had passed local policies adding e-cigarettes into their clean indoor air laws, including Duluth and Mankato. City officials from these communities have testified that these policies have not hurt businesses, and since then, 50 more communities across the state have followed suit. E-cigarette use is skyrocketing, and people do not want them to encroach on the clean indoor air they've enjoyed and come to expect in public places for over a decade. And they don't want their kids exposed to a behavior that renormalizes and glamorizes nicotine and tobacco use. In addition to our coalition, this proposal is supported by the Building Owners and Managers Association and the League of Minnesota Cities. I urge your support of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Myatt. And now we'll switch to public testimony. The sole public testifier who signed up is Cap O'Rourke. Mr. O'Rourke, you could state your name for the record and then proceed to your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Cap O'Rourke, Mr. Chair, committee members. I represent the retailers and manufacturers of vapor products in the state of Minnesota. So I'd like to clear up a few things about these products. So the majority of all businesses that are in this market are small business owners across the United States and not big tobacco. Even with Juul's recent amazing growth and being purchased by Altria, the majority of the businesses in this industry are still small businesses. Most of these small business owners hate big tobacco just as vehemently as I would say Representative Halverson does, as most of them were former smokers themselves. They know firsthand the dangers of the product. In fact, in Minnesota, our retailers, our vapor retailers, did a survey of our customers. The average age was 38 years old. They had been smoking for at least 20 years, and they had tried at least three times unsuccessfully to quit, mostly with products such as the patch, the gum, the lozenge, and other methods that have been promoted over the years. What we do know is, according to the Minnesota Department of Health, that vapor products amongst adults are the most popular method for adults looking to quit. We also know that overseas in England, Public Health England, which was the first organization to come out against the dangers of cigarettes in 1965, has deemed that vapor products are at least 95% safer than cigarettes and should be embraced as a cessation tool. We also know that in a recent article in the New England Journal of Medicine, that vapor products, when used with counseling, were shown to be twice as effective in adults looking to quit as traditional products. And the reason we bring this up with the Clean Indoor Air bill, one of our concerns is that you take an average adult who's been smoking for 20 years, and they're now moving to vapor products, and you're telling them that not only are they going to have to get used to a new product, but when they go out and try to use this product to break the habit that they've been addicted to for 20 years, they're going to go and have to stand right next to the same smoke and the same known carcinogens that they've been trying to get away. When we talk about the clean indoor air standard that we enjoy in Minnesota, it should be noted that we actually do not have a standard. There is no test to determine what the particulate matter is in our air quality. In fact, if you were to purchase a nicotrol inhaler, an FDA-approved cessation device, and you were to exhale it, you would find heavy metals in the air, similar to that of those coming out of vapor devices. In fact, the CDC and the California Department of Health, when they did air quality surveys inside vapor stores after a 10-hour shift with people constantly vaping, there were no level of toxins or formaldehyde or heavy metals that rose above any established OSHA level. So the notion that these are providing dangerous levels of toxins is simply not proven out. The reality is these are products that adults are using to try to quit smoking. It's one of the litany of products that adults have tried using, some with more success than others. But including these products in the clean indoor air is going to send a message to adults that these products are equally as harmful as tobacco. And that simply is not the case. It just is not the case. Even the FDA Director Gottlieb, who is concerned about this epidemic, has said that these products do show a potential pathway for adults looking to get off smoking. Additionally, one technical concern that we have is that when we crafted the Clean Indoor Air Act in 2006, we allowed exemption for tobacco product shops. And these are products that have 90% of their products are either tobacco or tobacco-related, and they can allow sampling. Think of, at the time, the reason was a cigar store. Well, this bill it updates a lot of part of the ordinances, but it doesn't update that, and we are concerned that a vapor product shop who doesn't have any cigarettes, tobaccos, or cigars would be prohibited from allowing sampling or testing within their store. So as we move forward, we would like to work with the chair to just make sure that that part is clarified so that vapor shops that sell only vapor products would still be able to get allowed to use these products within their premises. Thank you.
Thank you. That is the extent of the list of people who signed up to testify. Is there anyone else present who wishes to testify as to this bill? Seeing no one, we'll move to member questions. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Halverson, thank you for this bill. I've added my name to it. And if you don't want it, I sometimes easier ask for permission or forgiveness than permission. So this is a great bill, members. I hope we just get this thing right out of here. And my history on this is I was at the State Fair at the Old Dominion concert, and right in the middle of She Kept the Hotel Key, this person in front of me lights this thing up. And it was just unbelievably annoying. And I said, ma'am, I said, according to statute, the Outdoor Clean Air Act, statute 144.417, subdivision 4, this is prohibited by law. And she looks at me and says, really? I said, yes, you can't be doing this. So I apologized to her that I thought it was already against the law to do that during She Kept the Hotel Key. But then right before the song Beer Can in the Truck Bed, She still had it going. And finally, I said, ma'am, do I have to call security? I mean, who doesn't want to go to an Old Dominion concert? I mean, really. And then between my favorite songs, she's lighting this thing up. So this is bad. Let's not just ban it indoors. Let's ban it outdoors. Let's just get rid of these things. They're awful. So good bill. I hope you allow me on it. I'm already on it. So I really appreciate that. And members, I hope we can all support this bill.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first of all, Representative Halverson, I'm going to assume you have the votes to pass this bill out of this committee today. Is that a fair statement? So I should keep my I should keep my comments to a minimum on it. Well, Mr. Chairman and my friend Representative Davids, I guess I was kind of hoping there might be some people around this table in both parties who actually care a little bit about civil liberties, personal freedom, and personal choice. You know, I was around for the smoking ban debate back in 2000 and whatever, it was a long time ago, right? And I remember the way that was told to us. It was that this was a health issue, that when you smoke a cigarette indoors, secondhand smoke was a threat as a workplace safety. It was a direct threat to people. And when people like Representative Rukavina and other civil libertarians got up and said, no, this is about telling people what to do, we were assured this was not about telling people what to do. This was all about, no, this is a personal, this is a health crisis. You don't have the right to jeopardize the health of others. Yet here we are today, and we're talking about regulating or banning a product that if I were using right now would cause no health impacts to you or anyone else in this room. Now, you might find it annoying, but my presence is probably annoying, and I don't think we should necessarily make that illegal. So there's a lot of arguments to make on this. I mean, first of all, you know, I used to joke about this, that if tobacco is so bad, why don't the Democrats just make it illegal? Why don't you guys just ban it? But I think we're actually a couple years away from the Democrats trying to do that. This started out as Phyllis Kahn prohibiting smoking in the Capitol, and now we've gotten to the point where it's really just about telling people what to do. I do think it's interesting that the analogy or the comparison to tobacco companies was brought up. There are two DFL co-sponsors on the legalizing weed bill in this committee. And who's gobbling up cannabis companies right now? Who's purchasing and consolidating them? Tobacco companies. Tobacco companies are purchasing cannabis companies, the consolidation and centralization of the industry. I view this product as a tool for people who've had a hard time quitting smoking that they can use. You went on about how kids shouldn't be using it. I agree. Kids shouldn't be using it, but your bill is about whether people can use this product indoors. The extension of this is going to be people who live in public housing can't use this in their own homes where they're living, or you're not going to be able to use this in any public place. There are some of us who are interested in actually allowing individuals the personal freedom to decide how to live their lives without telling the rest of us to do. And I would hope this bipartisan trend, which, by the way, it's disappointing to see some members of my party on this bill, that I hope this bipartisan trend of nanny state paternalism where the government's going to tell everyone what to do, that we stop and turn the corner on this. There is no reason to pass this bill that I can see. I actually vaped in my office for the first time yesterday, and it was a great time. I got a great buzz out of it. It didn't hurt anyone. So I hope that as a adult in the state of Minnesota, I can choose what I want to do, to use a phrase, with my own body. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo, for the history of tobacco reduction policies in the state of Minnesota. Representative Kahn did really break a barrier and change the conversation about what it meant to have clean air indoors. We continue to add to this law. Minnesota made history in 1975 when that bill was passed. And for those people who thought that we couldn't pass and that businesses wouldn't be successful with clean indoor air, we've been proven wrong. We have a thriving restaurant and bar industry in the state of Minnesota. And it absolutely was about the health of Minnesotans. We know, not just from data in Minnesota, but around the state, that communities that adopt these policies see a downturn in the number of heart attack admissions in hospitals. That is absolutely about health policy. And anybody who thinks it doesn't, go spend a little time in another state and see how quick it takes you to get sick if you are in a restaurant, bar, casino, whatever, where you don't have clean indoor air protections. You're going to have a headache. You're going to be nauseated. You're going to smell. This is about our health. And the other benefit of this is that it's taking the normalization out of using cigarettes in Minnesota and using tobacco products in Minnesota. Why we would go back is beyond me. Why would we go back in the name of somebody's liberty and not everybody's liberty to be healthy, to make sure that they can live without addiction? Because I will tell you, you don't live a life of liberty when you're living a life of addiction. And so this is absolutely about the health of Minnesotans and making sure that we don't create another generation of people who think that this behavior is normal, safe, and enjoyable and sociable.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson. You know, this is one of those bills, and I thank Representative Groffalo for bringing up the issue of liberty and the ability for individuals to make their own decision. And I know we're going to be taking up another bill here really shortly. I think the issue around young people and how, in many ways, they're seen as cash machines and opportunities for some scrupulous, maybe unscrupulous corporations, start them young, get them hooked, keep them moving forward. And, you know, I think that when we talk about issues related to addiction, that's a conversation. I think this is also a little bit different because it is about clean indoor air. And, you know, I remember when I was young, all this talk about, you know, restaurants were going to all close. And, you know, then when it went to bars, it's like, oh, my God, really? People aren't going to be able to drink and smoke at the same time? And we seem to have been able to weather that so far. And, you know, relative to how this is going to impact individuals, we're not outlawing vaping, is from what I can tell on this bill. So I don't think that we're doing anything different other than we did with our original Clean Indoor Act, which is, you know, now countrywide in many places, that's sort of the norm now. So I think that it would really be good of us to include this, and I'm glad that my colleague Representative Davis is in support of this, because I think it's a good move for us. And you know, again, there was a loophole that we didn't see until they developed vaping machines, and thank you for closing the loophole.
Representative Haley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have as colorful a story as being at a concert, Chair David's, nor am I as animated as Garofalo, Representative Garofalo.
Good thing you're following me.
But I am a signer onto this bill, and just this past week in my hometown newspaper, the cover story is, we need to talk about vaping. The tsunami is hitting area schools. And the high school principal was at a Big Nine conference meeting with principals throughout the district and saying the number one thing they were talking about was trying to find a way to address this and find the best way to keep their students safe. I'm a signer on this bill because this is about our kids, the next generation, and the science proves this out. I try to look at legislation that I sign on to not out of emotion but out of fact, and we know these products are dangerous, and we need to take this step for to not only to stop that next cycle of addiction and usage, but to prevent the rising health care costs. It's another one of my passions and the reason I'm serving, and the facts play that out as well, that cigarettes cause long-term health injury and are one of the major factors in our escalating health care costs. So I think this is the right move for the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Haley, for bringing up the issue of schools, too. I'll tell you, my wife is a high school English teacher, and the problem that they are having in her school with Juul use throughout the school is just terrible. It's a real epidemic. It's out of control in the bathrooms, in the hallways, everywhere else. So it's a very important issue to raise. I see no more members on the list, and so, Chair Halverson, I don't know if you want to re-renew your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will just ask for the committee member's support, and with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 349 be re-referred to the General Register.
Representative Halverson renews her motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion carries.
Thank you, members. Welcome to the committee, Representative Adelson. Okay. Okay. Welcome to the committee. Appreciate you being here. Just again to roadmap, we're running a little bit over, members, so appreciate people's patience. I would like us to hear from the author and then hear from our public testifiers before we make a decision about recessing and reconvening later. So with that, Representative Adelson, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you. Just a procedural question as you were on that. The question I guess I have is, are we going to hold amendments too, just because we have a large number of people from the public and we want to try to get them through and get them on the road given the weather conditions? And then if the committee does need to meet longer and or after reconvening tonight, that we can address those issues again for the public's benefit?
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for bringing the amendments up. Other than the author's amendment, I think that that is a good plan. I think that making sure we hear from the public first is our priority right now.
We are in agreement.
Snow continues to fly. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. So with that agreement, I appreciate that clarification. I will move House File 331 be re-referred to the General Register. And Representative Adelson, I see this A4 as an author's amendment. Is that correct?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to that the A4 amendment puts the bill in the shape.
Okay, then I will also move the A4 amendment to put the bill in the shape that the author wishes. Any discussion to the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The amendment is the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So to your bill as amended, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It is my honor and privilege to present House Bill 331 today. This bill would increase the age people can be sold tobacco products from 18 to 21. This idea is so popular, it's become a movement with the name Tobacco 21. I wanted to carry this bill because in May of 2017, Edina, my hometown, was the first local community to pass Tobacco 21 in Minnesota. I was very involved in the local effort, organizing the community on education sessions, activating my network, and testifying to our city council on behalf of our Human Rights Commission. Since then, 22 other Minnesota cities and counties have followed Edina to protect the youth in their communities as well. Nationally, 6 states and over 400 cities and counties have passed Tobacco 21. It's sweeping over every part of this country. This was important to my predecessor as well, Dario Anselmo, a Republican. I am confident this is a bipartisan public health issue we can tackle together. We cannot sit by and watch our kids develop lifetime addictions. It is time for us to stand up for our youth. Tobacco 21 will prevent youth tobacco use and save lives. The National Academy of Medicine found Tobacco 21 would have a considerable impact on delaying cigarette smoking, writing, if someone is not a regular tobacco user by the age of 25, it is highly unlikely that he or she will become one. Tobacco 21 is the best tool we have for making that age of initiation higher. By raising the tobacco age, we can also help remove the tobacco products from our high schools and middle schools. We can help protect teens and populations targeted by tobacco industry, especially people of color, members of the military, LGBTQ people, and others. Most teens who use e-cigarettes and other tobacco products get them from friends and classmates. There are plenty of 18-year-olds in high schools, but there are very few 21-year-olds. Oh, and yes, members, I have snacks, just so you know, too. Thank you. Oh, good. I'm glad. There's broad support for this movement, and Minnesota can join in leading states by raising the age to 21 this year. Hopefully the sugar will help you agree with me. The testifiers here today will share the latest research on Tobacco 21 and talk about how tobacco and e-cigarettes have impacted their own lives. First, let me take a minute and walk you through the bill. Section 1 adds e-cigarettes and charter schools to the section pertaining to the use of tobacco in schools. Section 2 updates the definition of tobacco product shop to reflect the new age standard. Under Section 7, the requirement for compliance checks remain essentially the same. However, the bill includes the new state reporting requirements to improve accountability and enforcement. The amendment provides more detail in the section as requested by DHS. The rest of the amendment is strictly cleanup.
Section 10 requires proper signage at local locations where tobacco is sold and enhances age verification requirements. Section 11 updates our current definitions to ensure that we're covering e-cigarettes. A number of the sections will deal with penalties. Instead of going through each one of them section by section, I think it will be easier for me to summarize them. First and foremost, my bill removes penalties for underage use, possession, and purchase, which many call PUP penalties. This is a critical part of the bill. This policy is about holding persons 21 and over, primarily licensed retailers, accountable when they sell and give products to underage persons, and holding them an industry accountable that profits off of addiction and disease. This is not about punishing our children. We do not want or need to increase interactions between youth with law enforcement in negative ways. I'm happy to report that nearly all Minnesota communities removed PUP penalties when they passed Tobacco 21. We've also reduced the penalties for individuals over 21 who sell and give products to persons under 21, making it a petty misdemeanor instead of a misdemeanor for the first offense, and a misdemeanor instead of a gross misdemeanor for the repeat violation over 5 years. Penalties remain for a person who gives an underage person a fake ID, and an underage person caught using a fake ID will face a civil alternative penalty path. The licensing provisions increase administrative penalties on tobacco license holders. The administrative penalties haven't increased in years, so we are right-sizing them. Local units of government can use these penalty payments to support compliance and enforcement. Thank you for considering this bill. Tobacco 21 is about protecting kids, and it's about saving lives. In the face of youth epidemic that we have seen, Representative Haley mentioned it, this is the right thing to do for Minnesota. And Madam Chair, should I move to my first testifier then?
Thank you, Representative Adelson. You can introduce your first testifier. Okay. You can state your name and welcome to the committee. And just kind of for everybody's information. We've got 11 testifiers. I'd like to, you know, be done by 4:30 if we could with public testimony. So I know everybody's efficient. So thank you.
Go fast. Good afternoon, Chair Halverson and committee members. I'm Kristen Ackert, Policy and Research Manager at the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota. We have conducted research to understand how policies like Tobacco 21 impact retailers. We've looked at industry reports from the National Association of Convenience Stores, Nielsen, and peer-reviewed journals. What we've learned is that tobacco is a declining category for convenience stores. More people go into their stores for packaged food and drinks, which is where they make most of their money. 18 to 20-year-olds make up only about 2 to 4% of cigarette sales. This means that Tobacco 21 will have minimal impact on tobacco retailers. That's likely why we've seen less and less business opposition to local Tobacco 21 ordinances. The tobacco industry's business plan hinges on gaining new customers and keeping current customers. The tobacco industry uses creative marketing, giveaways, emails, coupons, and social media celebrities to make their products more affordable and appealing to youth. I brought a couple examples today that I'm happy to pass around, some birthday coupons from General Snooze and some buy one, get one free coupons from Black and Mild. And just for fun, wanted to show some of the giveaways that we collect in our office. This is a cocktail kit, a carry-on cocktail kit, along with some bitters for a birthday gift from Black and Mild. So happy to pass this around to show. There you go. Sorry, there's some confetti there. There's also some coasters from Black and Mild that are in the shape of record players. So these are free giveaways that the tobacco industry is giving to their customers purely for being their customers. I've also brought along an e-cigarette that you may not have seen. This is a Soren. I'm also happy to pass that around as well. It's an e-cigarette that's actually marketed as a stealth vaporizer. That is, it's an e-cigarette that's easy to use and conceal in places that they're not allowed, like a school. This is a Juul, which I know you've heard a lot about today, but maybe not have seen just yet, so I'll pass that around as well. The Juul has sparked a new nicotine arms race, essentially. Mm-hmm. Juul dominates the market with about 73 to 76% market share. Their growth didn't come from taking sales from other e-cigarette companies, and they didn't do it by selling to smokers, despite what their lobbyists say. They expanded the market by bringing in consumers who have never used nicotine before, most of which are youth and young adults. Data from Minnesota shows that e-cigarette use by young adults has nearly doubled since 2014, and that the overwhelming majority of them, 73%, never use nicotine before trying e-cigarettes. These young people are paying the price for this nicotine arms race through addiction. And it's no surprise that Altria, the parent company of Philip Morris, merged with Juul late last year. Passing Tobacco 21 statewide would send a clear message that Minnesota will not stand by while the tobacco industry addicts a whole new generation. With minimal impact for stores, there's no reason to jeopardize the lives of young people for the sole benefit of the tobacco industry. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. I see our next testifier is Robert Hansen from Henry Sibley High School. And students, you guys can pull up some chairs. That's welcome. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm a teacher at Henry Sibley High School in Mendota Heights, Minnesota. I'm also the director and creator of a group called ALMAS at the high school, Anglos Latinos Motivados a Superarse, which loosely translates to Anglos Latinos Motivated to Succeed. Yes. Part of this program was to increase the graduation rate of the Latinos, and that is by strengthening families and community. To know that strong families and communities will produce stronger students. We tackled that and have eliminated the graduation gap at our high school with the Latinos, which is a third of the population. We target health issues, specifically the anti-tobacco, because my community, as far as the Latino community, is targeted. And so we are at the front line. I'm a teacher, and I can just share with you that knowledge. I recently polled the kids in my classes. There was not one student who did not know someone in the school who was vaping currently in and out of school. Educators across Minnesota, as you know, are tackling this, but we need your help. I want you to hear from my students because they're there. I can tell you on the way here, one of our students received a video of a 14-year-old student at the bus stop vaping just today. So I'd like you listen to them, I'd like to pass around some examples of things we've confiscated in our school. This is just a small amount. If we actually brought all the things that we've confiscated within the last 4 years, it would fill a duffel bag. These are not jewels. We do have those in our school, and you're going to see something else that is used. But these are specific things that we confiscated within the last year. Thank you.
Thank you. You may just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Hello, Chair Halverson and committee members. My name is Giselle Perez, and I am in ninth grade at Henry Sibley High School and a member of ALMAS. I strongly support raising the tobacco sales age to 21. Our school has seen kids caught vaping multiple times. There are consequences, and then they are caught again. This is what addiction is. If children are addicted, the addiction is all they think about in class, not the subject being taught. E-cigarettes are a big problem, but we also must keep in mind cigars, cigarillos, and smokeless tobacco products that target Latinos and other diverse demographics. Our state needs a strong and healthy future workforce that starts with making sure all our young people are engaged in their community and free from addiction to tobacco. Vape pens or e-cigs are a big problem in my high school. The bathrooms have become the vape rooms where students go to vape. I also see my classmates vaping outside and at parties. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Welcome. You may state your name and proceed, please.
Hi, my name is Azun Esparza. I'm in 11th grade at Henry Sibley High School, and I'm president of ALMAS. I also strongly support raising the tobacco sales age to 21. We've been told that smoking is bad for us, and we believe it, but e-cigs are perceived differently. People think it's a cool or status thing to vape. They come in many different shapes, sizes, and colors, so they're easy to conceal, and teachers and parents often mistake e-cigarettes for flash drives or chargers and other devices commonly found in our backpacks. Some of these products also don't leave an odor, so you can use them anywhere without anyone noting. Some students even have clothes meant for vaping, such as this hoodie that we found where an e-cig is disguised in the drawstrings of the hoodie.
Wow. That is shocking. Welcome to the committee. Thank you for being here, and you can state your name and proceed.
Yeah, my name is Brittany, and I'm a junior at Henry Sibley High School and a member of ALMAS. I'm also vice president of ALMAS. As a high school student, I know lots of 18-year-olds through sports, and clubs, and other activities at school, but not any 21-year-olds. That's the same for most kids. The influx of vape devices are coming into school through the 18-year-olds kids in the school. Just this morning, as I was waiting for the school bus, along with other high school students and other middle school students, there was a 14-year-old, a freshman, smoking at our bus stop. And everyone was getting a taste of that smoke and other stuff. But smoking and vaping take a toll on our futures long before serious health problems start showing up. Once students are hooked, it is more likely to distract them from class, sports, clubs, and a job. Tobacco 21 is extremely important to keep my friends from becoming addicted to tobacco products and stay healthy. Thank you for your leadership, and I hope you will support this bill.
Thank you for your leadership. We appreciate you being here. And I sent a picture of you guys to your superintendent. Way to go. Next, Latricia Vita. I'm sorry that I mispronounced your name. You may correct me when you state your name for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Latricia. It's Latricia Vita.
Vita.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been mispronounced way worse, Chair, so it's okay. You were close. My name is Latricia Vita again, and I serve as the Policy and Advocacy Manager at North Point Health and Wellness Center in North Minneapolis. I am also at-large commissioner of the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. Tobacco addiction doesn't happen to young people by accident. It is an experimentation at all. It's the result of deliberate and highly targeted marketing. The Philip Morris Company said raising the legal age for cigarette purchase to 21 could gut our key 17 to 20-year-old market. As for e-cigs, I've heard them compared to other dumb things kids do, like the Tide Pod Challenge. Let's be clear, Tide isn't spending millions trying to get kids to eat laundry detergent. Tide isn't making delicious candy-flavored soap and paying social media stars to eat pods, but Big Tobacco certainly is doing those things with e-cigarettes. In fact, every year in Minnesota, tobacco companies spend more than $100 million a year marketing and keeping users hooked. That doesn't even include e-cigarette ads, which were seen by 88% of Minnesota middle and high schoolers in 2017. Big Tobacco especially targets people of color. They advertise more in our neighborhoods and magazines. A recent national study found that there are up to 10 times more tobacco ads in black neighborhoods than in other neighborhoods. They put menthol in cigarettes to hook us. They target us with cigars, cigarillos, and chewing tobacco. As a result, many communities of color are more likely to suffer and die from tobacco-related diseases. I'm going to show everyone who's been passing things around, so I'm going to pass things around too. Here are some, I have some ads here. Here are some examples. This ad is from Marlboro, and it shows Big Tobacco's marketing tactics towards people of color. It also includes a dollar off of menthol. I'll pass them around. This one is the Virginia Slims ad from 1999. It features a beautiful black woman and shows the brand that is known for targeting women, urging women to find their voice. And then finally, this is a recent Juul ad that shows how they targeted youth and people of color through colorful, fun-looking ads. This vaporized campaign ran when the brand launched its blatantly targeted youth campaign. Tobacco 21 will help put the brakes on this deadly industry. And just so there's no mistake, Tobacco 21 is about protecting kids and health, not punishing them for becoming addicted. This bill does not punish the buyer, the person who's addicted to tobacco. No, this bill keeps penalties where they belong, on those who sell to underage young people. We have got to stand up and do what's right for our kids and our communities of color. Tobacco 21 is going to help our youth be tobacco free. That's something we can all feel good about. And thank you all today for listening to me.
Thank you for your testimony. Dr. Ann Joseph. And after Dr. Joseph, Emily Anderson. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed.
Chair Halverson and members, my name is Ann Joseph. I'm a physician investigator and professor at the University of Minnesota Medical School. I'm also past president of the Society for Research on Nicotine and Tobacco and have spent most of my working life trying to help people stop smoking. We need broad protections from the health threats posed by tobacco, and especially the new high nicotine tobacco products. The brain is still developing between the ages of 18 and 21. Research shows that the brain continues to develop well into the 20s. Animal and human studies show damaging and permanent effects of nicotine on the developing adolescent brain. Therefore, pediatricians and other pediatric providers definitely worry about kids being exposed to nicotine. Tobacco affects cognitive function, brain structure, and nicotine exposure at a young age primes the brain for addiction to cigarettes and other substances. Almost 95% of adult smokers started by the age of 21. If people don't start by the age of 21, they likely never will. So preventing addiction means we've got to keep people from starting before that time. Teenage years are the prime time for people to become dependent. And any of the patients that I've worked with will tell you that tobacco is an incredibly difficult addiction to break. So the longer the brain can go nicotine-free, the better. And that's why we need to make tobacco products hard for teens to access. We've heard today that the National Academy of Medicine predicts that raising the tobacco age to 21 would reduce smoking initiation among 15 to 17-year-olds by 25%, which would prevent thousands of Minnesota students from ever becoming smokers. I practiced at the Minneapolis VA for 27 years and took care of veterans for that entire time. So I want to address the misconception that for some reason members of the military should be excluded from this policy. There is a misguided idea that it's important that military members should have easy access to tobacco products. It's really a disservice to our veterans and to our state. Our personal research program has shown that veterans smoke at a higher rate than the general population, and as a consequence, they suffer more health consequences from smoking than the average person. Tobacco 21 is not about punishing kids or punishing service members. It's about promoting healthy brain development and protecting kids from a lifetime of addiction, death, and disease, which is just an important and worthy goal, and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Emily Anderson, followed by Brian Rouse. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Halverson, members of the committee. My name is Emily Anderson, and I'm a program manager at the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota. I'm here today to speak in favor of Tobacco 21 and against an exemption for active duty service members. The Department of Defense estimates 175,000 current active duty service members will die from smoking. Military service members smoke significantly more than the general population. The Marines have the highest smoking rate at over 30%. Big Tobacco has long targeted young enlisted personnel through sponsored events and heavily discounted or free tobacco. R.J. Reynolds described enlisted service members as less educated, part of the wrong crowd, and the classic downscale smoker in their military-focused marketing plan. Lorillard said there isn't a market in the country that has the sales potential for Newport, like the military market, adding that the plums are here to be plucked. For me, the tobacco industry's clear disrespect for the military is personal. This is my brother.
Corporal Jacob Anderson. He served in the U.S. Marine Corps from 2000 to 2007, including three overseas deployments during the Iraq War. He came home physically unscathed. My family and I know how lucky we are for that. Unfortunately, like many others, he also came home heavily addicted to tobacco, even though he enlisted at 18 as a non-smoker. My brother described the culture of tobacco use in the military. We were kids, stressed, sleep-deprived, away from our friends and families, often with bullets flying at our heads. Smoking and dipping were part of our everyday activities. Every platoon had at least a few packs of cigarettes and several cans of chew with them at all times. In other words, tobacco was everywhere and cheap. This was a direct result of tobacco industry practices. Luckily, my brother was able to quit after he came home. However, many can't and are saddled with a lifetime of addiction and disease. I believe we have the same duty to protect the health and lives of our military 18 to 20-year-olds as we do civilians. I hope you will support Tobacco 21 for everyone, including active duty service members like my brother. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Brian Rouse, followed by Jody Gerken. There are four additional testifiers. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record.
Hello, hello, Madam Chairperson. My name is Brian Rouse. Thank you, members of the committee, for allowing me to speak today. I'm from the great city of Minnetonka, which passed Tobacco 21 in 2018. Proud to say that through the hard work of all the people at ACS Ken, that we made that happen. I'm a cancer survivor and a volunteer for the Cancer Action Network. In high school, like many other children in Minnesota and Wisconsin, I was in ninth grade and I got on the varsity hockey team. Once joining the team, we were there with a bunch of 18-year-old seniors, and it was kind of, you know, cans of chew were everywhere, and, you know, here you go, here, join the team. The two most popular flavors, just out of curiosity, were root beer and bubble gum. Our coach chewed, basically everybody on our team chewed. That was when I was 14 I started. It was pretty rampant in high school at that time. After many, many years, I can say that 2 years ago I was able to quit tobacco entirely. If Tobacco 21 was in ordinance when I was a child, I kind of feel like I never would have started to begin with, and many more like me would probably benefited from that same protection. The vast majority of underage tobacco products come from 18 and 19-year-olds. I used to work at a popular metro gas station chain, and it was hard for me to think and know that a lot of the products that we were selling legally would walk out the door and then change hands into somebody who's underage or, you know, not of age to buy tobacco products or to really understand the consequences of their actions. We also sold legally sold tobacco products to people that were taking their oxygen tanks out to come up to the counter to get cigarettes. I mean, well into their 70s and 80s. And it's stuff like this that, you know, just made me not want to do that anymore. I've heard convenience stores say that Tobacco 21 will mean that they'll have to close their doors. That couldn't be further from the truth, having looked at their P&Ls, that they're fine. We've heard the argument passed that the Indoor Clean Air Act would have taken away businesses from bars and restaurants and all that. It's the same. There's no way. It won't happen like that. The long-term public health impacts far outweigh the short-term potential disruption to area retailers. We know that one-third of cancers are caused by tobacco. And though my cancer was not tobacco-related, I would like to prevent anybody from having to sit down in a room and being told you have cancer. I'm telling you all this because you have the power to prevent cancer. You have the power to prevent tobacco use from an entire generation. Please vote yes on Tobacco 21 for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Jody Gerken, followed by Thomas Bryant. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
State your name and proceed.
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Jody Gerken, and I'm the Director of Wellness at CentraCare Health. I am also a constituent of Representative O'Driscoll's and had the pleasure of working with several of you on the Freedom to Breathe bill back in 2007. As you are likely aware, tobacco use still remains Minnesota's leading cause of preventable disease and death. In Minnesota alone, smoking costs an estimated $7 billion annually and takes the lives of more than 6,300 Minnesotans every year. Every man, woman, and child in Minnesota pays approximately $593 every year for these smoking-related costs. For employers like CenterCare, these costs are especially burdensome. Employees who smoke are estimated to cost companies nearly $6,000 more per year than non-smokers. That means if a large business employs 100 people who smoke, it translates to $600,000 in additional costs every year. The best way to reduce these costs is to help those who smoke quit, but equally important, prevent those who have never started, like our youth, from starting. Tobacco 21 is a growing movement throughout Minnesota that has broad public support. Look no further than the pages of our editorial boards for evidence of robust and growing support. As a mom of teenagers, I have seen the rise of tobacco and nicotine use in our middle and high schools firsthand. Sadly, no child is immune to the pressures of tobacco marketing. We can and should do more to protect our kids no matter where they live, whether that's urban and suburban Minneapolis or metro area or rural Minnesota. One zip code shouldn't reflect a vulnerability nor tobacco industry opportunity. All Minnesota youth need and deserve our protection. In St. Cloud, we were one of the first cities in the state to pass Tobacco 21, the third to be exact. We gained tremendous support from our community, and our city council got it passed. Regrettably, it was vetoed moments later in a belief that it was unconstitutional. However, it should be recognized that there are many age restrictions on products and procedures that have risk to the consumer, like purchasing alcohol, renting a vehicle, or reserving a hotel room, just to name a few. For all of these, you must be at least 21 years of age or older. And notably, these restrictions are overwhelmingly supported by the public. Tobacco should be no different. The health of our children and future generations cannot be ignored. As the largest employer and healthcare system in central Minnesota, CenterCare Health is passionately concerned about the health of our employees, our clients and their families, and the communities we serve. We are fully aware that more than 80% of the decisions that determine our health are not made within our hospital and clinic settings. Therefore, we are fully committed to doing all we can to ensure we not only provide outstanding care to those we serve, but likewise protect the health and well-being of the communities we represent. Together, we all must rally to protect the next generation of Minnesotans from addiction. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, Thomas Bryant, or Brian, so you can correct me, and followed by Genevieve Plumidor. Welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Tom Bryant, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association, which is a state tobacco wholesale trade group, and also the National Association of Tobacco Outlets, which is the National Retail Tobacco Trade Association. I'm here to ask you not to support House File 331 for four primary reasons. First, adults who are 18, 19, and 20 years old have the right to vote, take out student loans for college, they can get married, they can make their own health care decisions for themselves. We believe that if you're an adult, you should be able to have the right to choose what kind of legal products you purchase for your personal use. Second, according to the Tax Foundation and the Mackinac Center for Public Policy in Michigan, Minnesota has the fifth highest cigarette smuggling rate in the nation, with an estimated 35% of all cigarettes consumed in the state coming from other states. This high smuggling rate has a very negative impact on sales of tobacco products by retailers we represent. And the state is also impacted because of lost cigarette and tobacco excise tax revenue and sales tax revenue. House File 331 would likely increase the demand for smuggled tobacco products or for cross-border purchases because those 18, 19, and 20-year-olds would simply cross the border into other states to purchase and bring the products back. The incentive for smuggling is great, and that's because of the difference in tax rates between Minnesota and the surrounding states. You can save $26 a carton if you buy the same carton of cigarettes in North Dakota as Minnesota. You can save $15.10 a carton if you buy those products in South Dakota, $14.80 if you buy it in Iowa, and $5.20 a carton in Wisconsin. And this is the case because the bill does not ban possession and use of tobacco products if you're 18, 19, or 20, only purchase. So they can purchase it outside the state and bring it back in, and it's legal to use. Third, with the 18, 19, and 20-year-old segment of the market accounting for approximately 5% of all tobacco sales, our retailers can expect a corresponding 5% decline in sales, and the state would likely experience a similar tax reduction in terms of tax collections. However, for retailers that are near the state's borders, the tax impact would be even magnified, because those people who cross the border to buy tobacco products would probably also buy their gas, snacks, and beverages at the competing retailers in those adjacent states. Finally, the bill would also triple or quadruple penalties on retailers if they were to sell tobacco products to an underage individual. Minnesota retailers rank as nearly the highest percentage in terms of passing compliance checks in the country. About 98% of all retailers in Minnesota pass compliance checks for not selling tobacco to minors. This tripling and quadrupling of these fines is not only unnecessary, given retailers' high passing rates, but it's also unfair to those businesses who work very hard to ensure that they only sell to legal age individuals. For all these reasons, I urge you not to support House File 331. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Genevieve Plumador, followed by Cap O'Rourke. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam, for the record.
Thank you,
Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Genevieve Plumador, and I'm here representing Juul Labs. On behalf of Juul Labs, I want to thank you for the opportunity to submit testimony in strong support of House File 331, this legislation that would increase the minimum age for purchasing or possessing tobacco, alternative nicotine, and vapor products from 18 to 21 years of age. Juul Labs' mission is to improve the lives of the world's 1 billion adult smokers by eliminating cigarettes. This mission is driven by the fact that smoking is the number one cause of preventable death worldwide. In the United States alone, smoking kills approximately 480,000 people every year. We share a common goal with policymakers, regulators, parents, school officials, and community stakeholders: prevent the use of tobacco and vapor products, including Juul, by America's youth. We are committed to stopping youth access of Juul products, and no young person or nicotine user should ever try a Juul. In November of 2018, we began implementing a number of significant voluntary actions as outlined in our action plan, which should be in your packet. This action plan addresses youth access, appeal, and the use of Juul products. This included a major reset of how Juul Labs markets its and sells its products, requires automated sales controls to limit the purchase of certain flavored products to adults 21 plus. Currently, we only sell flavored products through our e-commerce platform, Juul.com, where we utilize sophisticated automated technology supported by third parties to ensure purchasers are 21 plus and to prevent bulk purchases. So regardless of the jurisdiction, you have to be 21 to purchase flavors online. We also eliminated our U.S. Facebook and Instagram accounts and are developing new technology to further limit youth access and use. We are committed to working with lawmakers, the Surgeon General, FDA, state attorneys generals, local municipalities, and community organizations as a transparent and responsible partner in this effort. We believe that these efforts, combined with increasing the minimum age to purchase tobacco and vapor products to 21, will drastically reduce the use of vapor products and access to Juul products. At Juul Labs, we are focused on creating an alternative to combustible cigarettes that provide an off-ramp for adult smokers. We recognize that we cannot do this without also actively working to pass proven legislation. And measures like this one that Representative Edelson is bringing forward is such a thing. Just two quick examples. In 2005, Needham, Massachusetts became the first locality to pass T21 legislation. 4 years after the law's enactment, a youth survey showed an almost 50% decline in high school student smoking rates. And the city of Chicago most recently found a 36% decrease among 18 to 20-year-olds. Therefore, Juul Labs strongly supports House File 331 and urges the committee to vote favorably.
Thank you for your testimony. Our final testifier that had signed up is not going to testify, so I would ask if there are any other members of the public that wish to testify for or against this bill. Seeing none, we can move to member discussion. And members, we will try to
do member discussion until 5 o'clock. If we do not finish by 5 o'clock, we can recess and reconvene, but we can't reconvene until 9 p.m. because of other committee work. So we can. I would like to start by entertaining amendments, and then we can move forward with our discussion. So the first amendment that I see in front of us is the A5 amendment. Representative Davids, did you wish to offer the A5 amendment?
Yes, I do. I'll move the A5 amendment.
Representative David moves the A5 amendment. Representative Davids, your amendment.
Well, thank you so much. And whereas the last bill was a very, very good bill, this is a very, very bad bill, especially for someone in my situation where my district borders Iowa and Wisconsin. The last time, I believe, it was 2013 when the cigarette tax was raised, it put businesses in my district out of business. This bill makes no sense at all, and so I'm going to try and help a little bit with it. But you can go, we're right on the Iowa border, right on the Wisconsin border. You just go across the river into Wisconsin, and you can buy whatever you want, you can smoke whatever you want, and so this bill is meaningless in those situations. We're going to create more smuggling opportunities and incentives, and so this is kind of a feel-good bill that really does nothing. So my A5 amendment says it exempts any convenience store than 10 miles of the border from the gas tax increase for 5 years. It is structured to work in conjunction with the current credit for border stations, although the distance cutoff is different. The intent is to alleviate some of the financial hit that the border stores will take, which they will. They get a double whammy. They were reducing tobacco sales, increased gas prices, and all you have to do is drive to Chester, Lime Springs, La Crosse, Decorah, load up your truck, and off we go. So this is a meaningless bill that hopefully the Senate doesn't pick up, but I can't say anything about the Senate. So I'd appreciate support on the A5 amendment.
Representative Adelson, do you have a response?
Madam Chair, Representative, I appreciate the intent of the amendment, but I think that our state will save dramatically in terms of cost of health care. I do not take it as a friendly amendment to the bill.
Thank you, Representative Adelson. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm really confused why we're looking at something that suspends the gas tax when we're talking about cigarettes, but that's okay. There was testimony about what this might mean for those areas of the state that are close to the borders. And remember, I wasn't here when it happened, but I'm almost certain that the same arguments were made around raising the drinking age to 21 in Minnesota when we raised it back to 21. And we've seen what's happened is it hasn't killed the liquor industry in the state of Minnesota. Seems to be doing fine. So I think we need to sometimes look at our history on the impact of some of these changes that we make in our laws and realize that sort of the unforeseen fears often aren't realized.
Thank you, Representative Dean. I guess I would just add as well, Representative Davids, appreciate your concerns. I'm very concerned about any business that is going to be building its margins on sales of products to people that we know impacts their brains. And if you're selling tobacco to teenagers, and 18 to 19-year-olds are teenagers, their brains aren't developed. And if that's the business model, that's a concerning business model for the health of Minnesota. And so I don't support this amendment
respectfully
either.
Oppose is what you're looking for.
I respectfully oppose.
Thank you. Well, and thank you, Madam Chair, but they're basing their business model on legal products. I've had in the past amendments to ban tobacco and ban cigarettes, period, but I don't get my friends on their side of the aisle to help me out there, and I'm serious about it. I hate tobacco. I shouldn't say hate. Can you say hate? I strongly despise tobacco. Okay, I really do. But it's a legal product. So either ban it or allow them to have a business model that includes selling a legal product. Now, my question is, before we vote, is since this affects tax revenues, does this need to go to tax committee? Because tax revenues will be lessened. It has an impact on the budget, so it is a budget issue.
Representative Davids, the motion is to send it to the General Register. There is, or excuse me.
Judiciary. Should go to taxes. I mean,
to judiciary. That was the motion, to go to judiciary? Yeah.
No, I think pretty sure.
So there is no tax provision in this bill, so it won't go to taxes.
Madam Chair, there is a tax provision in the bill. It reduces the state's collection of taxes for cigarettes. How can there not be a tax provision?
Representative Davids, as a former tax chair, you are very erudite in the area of taxes. However, I think that it's important to notice that there are no policy provisions with regard to taxes. Any time that tax collections vary over the course of any part of our economy, it doesn't mean that the legislature takes action. So there's no tax provision in this bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. A year ago there would have been, and it would have been in tax committee. and so I guess that's where we're at. So I appreciate your support on the A5 amendment.
Any more discussion?
Question.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, have you spoken with Chairman Marquardt about that? Has he said he doesn't want to see this bill? Or is it just not under his radar right now?
Representative Adelson, you can say if Representative Marquardt has asked to see your bill.
Madam Chair, Representative, no. It has not been on the radar of Representative Marquardt. I'd be happy to speak with him about it after we, as in the process, as we go to judiciary.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? No.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. We think it was close. The A6 amendment. Who would like to offer the A6 amendment?
Yeah.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Edelson, for bringing your bill forward. I'm actually not trying to change the nature of your bill. I'm actually trying to put some guardrails in for conversations that have happened in the inevitable. A lot of talking about legalizing recreational marijuana, so let's put those provisions in place that will make this safer if that happens. And one of those is that THC and legalized marijuana could not be within 5 years of a school or 5 miles of a school property. That's my amendment.
Representative Adelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Crescia, thank you for the amendment. But I would just say to this, respectfully, that marijuana has nothing to do with nicotine, and these are two separate conversations. So I do not view this amendment as something that I'd like to add to the bill. We are specifically trying to curb youth addiction to nicotine.
Representative Crescia.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and respectfully, these are incredibly related. We can say that one is tobacco, but the process of how this will eventually be ingested into an individual is going to be very similar. I mean, to not say that these two aren't going to be related, I guess, in my mind, is difficult. So I don't see this changing the nature of your bill. In fact, I think this would improve your bill and start to put some of those guardrails around what could happen with legalized recreational marijuana. I respectfully understand where you're at. I'm going to ask for a roll call, Madam Chair.
A roll call has been requested. Further discussion, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as I look at this bill, I begin to think that we haven't legalized recreational marijuana yet. And I would assume that in the event that we do, we could offer something like this to change to change our statutes regarding legalizing marijuana. And I actually think the more appropriate analogy would not be with smoking, it would actually be with alcohol.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Any further discussion? I agree that this is significantly outside the scope of what Representative Adelson is trying to do. I appreciate your concern, Representative Crescia. I would have one question. I know that you have concerns about manufacture in your school properties. I don't know. We currently have two manufacturers in the state of Minnesota who manufacture medical cannabis. Have you spoken to them about your amendment?
I have not, Madam Chair. I voted against that bill.
And Representative Crescia, do you have any science that says that this impacts access for children?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I do. And this amendment is a sales and solicitation. And actually, I don't believe it would affect the medical cannabis industry. But I do have a lot of detailed research, and I'd love to talk to you or somebody about it, about the effects of marijuana and what it's doing in the child protection in Colorado and Seattle and Washington. We can look at how those numbers have gone up and how the schools are now fighting this. And I'm happy to go through all that science. I'm not a science denier in that area, and it's very good. Depends. It helps my amendment.
Hey, Representative Garofalo. Representative Kreisha, thank you for that. It sounds like your amendment and your discussion is well suited for any potential bills that may come before this committee regarding marijuana, medical or recreational. And it sounds like you'll be ready to have that discussion at that time with the appropriate bill. With that, any further discussion? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to note that I think this amendment may be broader than Representative Kreisha intended, or maybe not, and I would, I guess, maybe direct a question to him if I can. Section 15201 of Minnesota statute, which is where he's inserting, this amendment would insert this language, has provisions that deal with a whole bunch of things dealing with controlled substances. Among them is our criminal code sections related to controlled substances. So when you're talking about a first-degree drug possession or second-degree drug sale, any of the felony-level criminal charges include definitions and rely upon the definitions in Section 15201. And he's expanding the area of a school zone to 5 miles beyond the school property with using marijuana, which I think would be a pretty radical escalation of what would apply when we're talking about prosecuting someone for sale or possession of marijuana in a school zone. And I don't know if that's his intent, and I guess I would just ask if you could speak to how he intends this to interact with our criminal code.
Representative Kreisha.
Madam Chair, I guess my question would be, how close should these people that are selling horrible things for our kids be to our schools? I think 5 miles is appropriate distance, and I'd even make it further.
Representative Stevenson, follow up?
He answered my question.
Okay, very good. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll on the bill, or on the amendment, sorry.
This is roll call vote for Amendment A6. Halverson?
No.
Stevenson?
No.
O'Driscoll? Carlson?
No.
Davids? Dean?
No.
Elkins?
No.
Garofalo?
Pass.
Haley? Howard?
No.
With Katiza Watun?
No.
Kreisha?
Yes.
Lesh?
No.
I'm not going to win this.
Lislegard?
No.
Mahoney?
You did okay.
O'Neill?
Pass.
Richardson?
No.
Suzinski?
Yeah.
Tapke?
No.
Tice?
Yes.
Garofalo?
No.
O'Neill?
There being 3 ayes and 13 nays, the amendment is not adopted. The A7 amendment is next. Would somebody like to offer the A7 amendment?
I get that one as well.
Representative Kreisha.
Madam Chair, I just, this is to, and thank you, Representative Ellison, this is just to change the civil penalties, and I want to make sure you have my notes here, allows the Commissioner of Human Services to impose a civil penalty upon a retail establishment for selling tobacco or an employee of such an establishment for selling to underage persons.
And are you moving that before the committee?
I am moving that amendment.
Representative Kreisha moves the A7 amendment. Representative Adelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kreisha. I'm torn on this. I actually have somebody from DHS here. Matt, if you could come down and just speak to DHS's opinion on this amendment.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Burdick, you can state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Matt Burdick with the Department of Human Services. And I apologize, we just saw this amendment this afternoon when it was posted. I would say that this would be a brand new function for the department. We don't typically, at least the area that works in tobacco control, levy fines or do things of this action. So I think this is something we'd have to take back and have a lot more discussion about.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, and I would also just, and Representative Cresha, we are increasing the fines already. And so, I mean, in terms of looking at that, we can definitely work on this, but I'm hesitant on too much increase.
And Representative, your next stop is judiciary, so this discussion could continue. Representative Elkins.
Yeah, aren't these violations usually prosecuted by municipalities?
Representative Elkins, you are correct. This is currently under the jurisdiction of local governments. It would be the state taking over the work of local governments. Representative Elkins.
Yeah, follow-up is, it's, as a member of the Bloomington City Council, I remember these kinds of things coming before us on a fairly regular basis, and I recall the city dealing with this effectively. I don't know why local governments would want the state to get involved in this.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Further discussion? I think that's a salient point that Representative Elkins raises. I know that in my community, we typically, our citizens really support government at its lowest possible level, and they this is something that the city has been taking on, and taking away powers from local governments is generally frowned upon among my citizens. Any additional discussion?
I'm shocked that my colleagues wouldn't go for big government, but let's go to a vote.
Okay, Representative, let's see. All those in favor of the A7 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. And we have before us an A9 amendment.
I believe the A8 we're going to withdraw.
Thank you.
As well as the A9 and the A10.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Cresha. Thank you, members, for your efficiency. We can move on to member discussion now, and we have 20 minutes. So, thank you, Representative Swazinski.
I'll pass.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author of the bill. So can you clarify what the changes on the final page of the bill, page 9, subdivision 3? What will be the penalties for someone who is arrested for smoking?
Representative Adelson.
Madam Chair, Representative, the idea is to not penalize someone for actually smoking.
Representative Garofalo, follow up.
So, Madam Chair, and to the author, so whether you are 20 years of age or 13 years of age, there's no fine, no assessment, there's no requirement for a penalty from the state?
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, Representative, there would be an alternative penalty in terms of looking at smoking reduction programs, trying to ensure that we're not creating a juvenile record for these kids, but actually helping them. I can think my background is as a social worker. I can tell you that putting kids in juvenile detention centers because they're smoking nicotine doesn't fix the problem. What actually will help the problem is actually getting them some intervention so that we can actually help them.
Thank you. And Madam Chair,
Representative Garofalo.
The author, previously another testifier, or one of the fellow members, brought up the issue that Minnesota actually has a rampant problem with the bootlegging of cigarettes right now. I don't know how much people realize that, but if a person from Minnesota were to go up to Grand Forks and they were to get a case of cigarettes, which is 60 cartons, are you aware of how much the value of that case of cigarettes increases when it comes across the border from North Dakota to Minnesota? And second part is, if you're not, what would you guess the increased value of that would be?
No. Representative Adelson, that's a good question.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I am not aware of that, but I would actually call a testifier. Amanda Jansen from Clearway, Minnesota, has been doing a lot of research in this area, so maybe it's something that she might be aware of.
So, Madam Chair, I'll just restate my question for the testifier. Again, if there are 60 cartons of cigarettes that are contained in
one case. If a person were to take a case of cigarettes taxed at the normal rate and bring them across the border from North Dakota, from Grand Forks into East Grand Forks, how much does the value of that commodity increase? And if you don't know, can you offer an educated guess on what you think it is?
And Ms. Jansen or Representative?
Madam Chair, Representative, we do not know that. The aim of this bill, I called on her, and this is a really tricky question that you're asking, but the purpose of this bill and all the testifiers that spoke before us today is to curb the fact that we have kids that are smoking. 40% of middle schools in Minnesota have tried e-cigarettes. I think you all seen all of the gadgets that they're using here. This is about making sure that we're protecting people. We're not looking at the profits of businesses. We're looking at making sure that we're protecting kids, because the CDC has said it, that we have an epidemic. The Surgeon General has said it, that we have a youth epidemic. And so all of you before you today are going to make that choice and make that vote on whether or not you think we have it. The facts are there. Now, the amount of the cost of a cigarette coming over the line, I don't know. But the cost to our society, if we do not pass this, is big. And you will all be thinking about what that feels like.
So, Madam Chair, and to the author, I wasn't disputing your intentions for what you want in this bill. I'm just asking that, you know, we have, and maybe people dispute the problem with bootlegging we have. I'm just asking if you know, and if you don't know, render a guess for us on what you think a case of cigarettes, how much, as a result of the differentiation in taxation between Minnesota and North Dakota, how much does a case of cigarettes go up in value crossing the border from Grand Forks to East Grand Forks? If you don't know, say you don't know and just offer an educated guess.
Representative Garofalo, I would like to say I don't think that it is good form for us to be guessing when we talk about public policy. I think it's good form for us to know our facts. And if you want those facts, I'm sure that somebody can get them for you.
Well, Madam Chair, I have the facts. I know the answer. I can give that to the committee if you'd like.
Representative Garofalo? Great.
The answer to the question is, if you take 60 cartons of cigarettes across the border from Grand Forks to East Grand Forks, it immediately becomes worth $1,560 more. This is why we have an epidemic of bootlegging in western Minnesota and rural Minnesota, where you can go to any VFW in the state and go to the front desk and get the sign-up clipboard from underneath where they buy cigarettes from across the board. Now, the effects of a loss of taxation, we don't get money from cigarettes for the revenue. We have plenty of taxes in the state to make up for it. I'm not concerned about that. But what my concern is we're providing yet another incentive to increase the amount of bootlegging that's happening in this state right now. And think about that. You're a college student in North Dakota right now. You can pick up one case of cigarettes, bring it across the border and sell it for, even if you cut them a deal, sell it for $1,000 more. I mean, this is kind of the argument. This is the argument for decriminalization. And the unintended, I don't dispute the author's intent. She's a good representative, and I know her heart's in the right place. But members should be aware of the problems that we're having currently with our current tax policies around this, and keep that in consideration for other policies. So thank you to the author, and I'm sure you would appreciate that I'm asking these questions now and not on the House floor. So thank you.
Further discussion? On behalf of Representative Swazinski, I would like to offer a question as he had to leave. He wanted to know if quit smoking products, FDA-approved products, are included in this definition of being available to 18 to 21-year-olds as well. Would that reduce the availability for young adults to access Nicorette gum or other FDA-approved quit smoking products? Representative Adelson?
Madam Chair, they are exempt. I'm being told from Mrs. Jansen.
Thank you for the clarification. Further discussion, members? Representative Katiza Watun.
As long as we're talking about finances and how much cigarettes cost and things along those lines, I'm curious if there's a big price differential between like the Juul cartridge thing and then the actual juices, and how big of a sway there is between like a box of cigarettes and buying one of those products.
Representative Adelson.
Madam Chair, I'm going to defer this question to Mrs. Jansen.
Ms. Jansen, welcome to the committee. If you could just introduce yourself.
Thank you. I'm Amanda Jansen. I work with Clearway, Minnesota. So, Cheryl Halverson, and Representative, to your question, you can buy a Juul cartridge with a starter kit, so it includes the equivalent of four packs that are each a pack of cigarettes, for about $70. And that's because Minnesota prides itself in really high tax rates on e-cigarettes. So this is hopefully helping the epidemic of youth vaping. A pack of cigarettes, for example, so the equivalent nicotine of one of those pods is around $8 or so.
Any thought? And just for the committee's knowledge, are the high tax prices for revenue collection, or are they a health policy to keep youth from smoking? Could you clarify that, please?
Yeah, Chair Harrison, it is absolutely for health. We know that price is the best thing that we can do to drive down nicotine addiction and tobacco use, especially among our kids.
Thank you for that clarification. Additional discussion? Seeing none, we can move to a vote on this bill. I renew my motion to re-refer House File 331 as amended to Judiciary and Civil Law. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. You are on your way. Representative Edelson, thank you. With that, members, we don't have to come back. Everybody have a wonderful evening. We are adjourned.